This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
This show is sponsored by Midi Health. There are great things that come with age: wisdom, experience, and knowledge, just to name a few. But if you're a woman over 40, it can also bring some less desirable things like hot flashes, insomnia, brain fog, moodiness, and weight gain, all symptoms of menopause and perimenopause. Yes, hormonal transition is a fact of life, but that doesn't mean you have to accept its symptoms as just another part of aging. Midi clinicians are menopause experts, equipped to support you with safe, effective, FDA-approved medications, as well as supplements, lifestyle coaching, and preventative health guidance. You'll come out of the experience feeling heard and with a plan to start feeling better. Midi offers accessible care. All their services are covered by insurance, and they're conveniently accessible through telehealth visits and 24/7 messaging. You deserve to feel great. Book your virtual visit today at joinmidi.com. That's join, M-I-D-I.
Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
It's 12:03 on Monday afternoon, September 16th. Good afternoon. Thanks for joining us on the Noon Business Hour. I'm Rob Hart. 86 degrees right now in Chicago, topping out around 90 today. We could break the record of 92 set in 1995. Cooler along the lakefront, a hot week ahead. The details and the complete forecast from AccuWeather coming up just a couple of minutes. The markets are mixed. Let's get the latest now on trading from Bloomberg and Tracy Jahnke.
Rob, Wall Street at midday is not veering from the path it set at the opening bell. The Dow is still up by about 120 points now. That's 1/3%. The NASDAQ is down 0.8%, 141 points, and the S&P is down 6. Quick check of Boeing stock, down 1.5% as the company's finance chief warns that temporary layoffs are a possibility, and as it's a Pacific Northwest factory workers walk picket lines. Rob?
Thanks, Tracy. We'll check in with you at 12:23. If you're looking for a raise, we'll share tips on how to ask for one in our next segment. But right now, the week ahead will include the latest announcements on interest rates from the Federal Reserve. Joining us on the Village of Bedford Park business line, reminding you to bring your business home, is Gus Fauché, Chief Economist, PNC Financial Services in Pittsburgh. Gus, thank you for joining us today. And the headline story this week is the Fed. They will have their policy meeting, and chances are, and we're talking about maybe a 99.999% chance, Gus, that they're going to cut interest rates this week. And I guess the guessing game now is it a quarter point or a half point?
I think that they'll cut by a quarter of a percentage point. I don't think that the economy is in dire straits. I think that the labor market remains pretty solid, although we were seeing slower job growth. But if later this year in early 2025 it appears the economy is softening further, the unemployment rate is going up, then I would expect to see the Fed cut more aggressively. But in the near term, I think we see a quarter of a percentage point cut at this meeting and then at the meetings in November and December as well.
What is this going to look like, that interest rate cut? What is it going to look like for consumers? And then what is it going to look like for the economy somewhat down the line?
Yeah, so I think for consumers, it's going to have less of an impact on longer-term interest rates like mortgage rates or, you know, seven-year car loans. But I think if you're on your credit card bill, if you're getting a car loan of a couple of years, I think you will see it translate pretty quickly into lower interest rates, and that should spur economic demand. That being said, it takes a while for the impact of lower interest rates to work their way through the economy. But I think by the time we get to the middle of 2025, with the Fed cutting steadily from the end of 2024 into 2025, we'll start to see the positive economic impact of those interest rate cuts with a bit stronger growth and perhaps a bit stronger job growth as well.
We're setting up the week ahead in data with Gus Fauché, Chief Economist, PNC Financial Services in Pittsburgh. We do have some numbers out today. Empire State Manufacturing. So business activity in the New York State region grew for the first time in nearly a year. So again, another data point pointing to the idea that we just have slow and steady economic growth.
That's right. Manufacturing activity has been hit hard by higher rates. Manufacturers tend to be more interest rate sensitive. I don't want to read too much into 1 month's worth of data, but certainly I would expect that with lower rates on the horizon that we will see manufacturing activity pick up somewhat in 2025.
And then tomorrow we have the latest reading on retail sales, and the consumer has really been keeping the economy afloat as the Fed was raising interest rates during its tightening cycle, and we'll see if that still holds true this week.
That's right. I think, we expect to see an increase of about 0.3% for retail sales. I think that overall consumers are in decent shape. Good job growth. Wage gains are still pretty strong, and wages are now at this point are going up faster than inflation. So I think that we see that consumer spending continues to increase at a moderate pace. Given that consumer spending makes up two-thirds of the overall U.S. economy, that's good news for continued growth in the broader U.S. economy later this year and then next year as well.
Gus Fauché, Chief Economist, PNC Financial Services in Pittsburgh. Thank you for joining us. Coming up next, giving yourself the best shot for success when seeking a pay raise. We'll talk about that next.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
If you feel you deserve more than what you're making at work, you should speak up. But some ways are better than others when you're looking to seal the deal. We're joined by Michelle Reisdorf, Chicago jobs expert, Robert Half Company in Chicago. Michelle, thank you for joining us today. And asking for a raise, especially at a place where you like where you're working, that could be a really tough proposition for you, even though you don't ask if you don't get if you don't ask, basically.
Absolutely. And it's not a bad thing to ask for a raise as long as you are prepared and you go in with the right approach. It could actually be a really healthy conversation and come out very positively for both sides.
Now, what are some things you should do as you prepare to have that conversation? I think everybody in America believes they deserve a raise for whatever it is they're doing. But how can you really assemble a positive case for yourself?
Yeah, there's a couple things. So number one, before you ask for a raise, you want to do your homework. So you can't just go in and ask without information to back that up. We always recommend, number one, research the market. And most people do this, which is why they think they deserve one, because maybe they see other positions posted that have higher salaries, or they know friends that, are being paid more. So do your research. Make sure you have a good number in mind to present to the employer. You could reach out to a staffing firm like Robert Half. We put together a salary guide that will help you with information. But make sure you find out what is out there competitively. And then from there, you have to actually build your business case of why you deserve that. So you want to look at things like a list of your accomplishments, your contributions, maybe projects you've managed. Have you saved the company money? Have you taken on additional responsibilities? So you want to go in there justifying the request for your raise, not just simply go in and ask. When you have your market research, and specifically to things that you have done over the past 3, 6 months, or even a year, that conversation is so much easier to have with your boss.
Some things to avoid when asking for a raise, bringing up personal or financial problems. I think everybody understands that I have a family, I have a growing family, I have obligations to meet. A good a reason as any for not only choosing the career that you do, but also in asking for more money. But should you bring that up?
No, absolutely not. You're right. With inflation, the cost of everything has gone up. So everybody needs more money, right? And so, again, you want that justification to be all the good things that you've done over the last year, not, to start it with a negative conversation. And then the other thing I highly recommend is timing. Maybe you plan that during a performance review, but you schedule an appointment with your boss. You don't want to surprise them or just kind of blurt something like this out. This is an important conversation, and it needs to be timed appropriately. Even considering things like, is your company or your department struggling? You want to make sure it's the best possible time to bring up a discussion about a pay increase.
And then it says making empty threats. I mean, should you, if you want to get a raise from your own company, should you explore your market value a little bit and say, look, I have interest from X, Y, and Z, or is that a bad negotiating tactic?
Yeah, no, you never want to make empty threats. Again, if you're not going to get exactly what you want in that moment, there's a couple different options you can take. You can certainly maybe sit down and talk with your boss about future growth opportunities and ask to revisit the conversation in 3 months. You could determine if there are other benefits or perks that might make up for that salary difference. So have a healthy conversation. It's okay to still walk out of that and say, well, maybe I should look and see what my options are. But, you know, if you're in a job that you really like, you know, with people that you like working with, you have to really put some consideration into, do I want to leave all of the rest of this for, you know, a few dollars more somewhere else? And certainly there are times in your career that you will make that jump, but be thoughtful about it.
And your last piece of advice, be brave, which is interesting. I mean, have you come across people who are able to close multi-million dollar sales? They're very good at selling the product, but they're very poor at selling themselves.
Yes, people always hate to talk about or fight for themselves. And again, I think all that preparation, we even tell you practice. This is a tricky conversation. So find a great mentor and practice this conversation so that you go into it as confident as you possibly can, even if you are capable of closing that million-dollar deal.
It's funny you mentioned the idea of practicing your salary speech, because I don't know if you remember the movie Defending Your Life with Albert Brooks, but there's this scene where he's practicing his salary pitch with his wife, and then the next day he folds immediately in the actual scenario. And that's relatable to a lot of people, I would imagine.
Absolutely. You know, again, it's always hard to put yourself in a conversation like this. And it can go very well if you're prepared, you practice, and you feel good about what you're asking for, you know. Otherwise, yes, it can go south very quickly, and you certainly don't want that.
Michelle Reisdorf, Chicago jobs expert with the Robert Half Company in Chicago. Thank you for joining us today. Coming up next, Chipotle looking to expand the robot presence at its restaurants.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Chipotle is introducing two new robots at a location in California, including one known as the Autocado. Let's discuss this latest move to automation with R.J. Hadavi, head of analytical research at the Los Altos, California-based foot traffic analysis firm Placer AI. RJ, thank you for joining us today. One observation that I had visiting the local Chipotle in my town in the Chicago area. Now, I look at every fast food restaurant now, RJ, through the lens of being the host of the Noon Business Hour. So I look at their workflow and to see, you know, what are they doing to get people through the restaurant faster. And one thing I noticed about Chipotle is that they really are encouraging online ordering. Don't sit there in line, order on the app, pick up your bag, and the whole kitchen is oriented around that. It seems like the avocado robot is one more step in that direction.
Yeah, you're exactly right, and good to hear that you're well on your way to being a restaurant analyst here, Rob. But yeah, exactly right. We're seeing a lot of restaurant chains start to embrace automation. Really, there's multiple reasons for it. We've talked about some of them in the past. The idea that, you know, improving throughput during peak hours is a big part of it. Order accuracy. And ultimately being able to reallocate labor in some other ways that can ultimately enhance the overall customer experience. So with these two robots, Chipotle is also looking to, potentially increase the consistency of orders. That's been a pushback from a lot of customers, is that sometimes the amount of avocado or guacamole that you get in your order is sometimes different each time. And then you also get, potentially with the rollout of the augmented make line, that's something that we've seen some really promising results for. Sweetgreen has a similar format in Naperville, and they've done a very good job. We've seen some really promising results for throughput. So, again, it really is making your business more efficient with these automation things. We'll see how it goes. I mean, they scale it, but that's kind of the goal.
And it seems like with Chipotle or Sweetgreen or some other restaurants in the quick service space that really play up the importance of fresh ingredients, that's a pretty labor-intensive process, because at Chipotle, you had to have someone make the chips and someone make the guacamole and someone grill all the ingredients and cut up the vegetables. And yeah, that requires a lot of people. And you also have to have someone who puts all the bowls and the burritos together. And that requires a lot of people. And as we've discovered in the last 2 years, people can be hard to come by.
Exactly. And then on top of that, too, you mentioned the idea of more people placing online and mobile orders. That just adds another layer of complexity, another challenge, and that's something else that has to be synced across all these functions. And so I think automation is going to help a lot of that, bring all these pieces together. If you are able to place a mobile order and that is automatically generated to this make line, the assembly line process is effectively replicating what you normally do, but just in an automated fashion. I mean, I think that has a lot of opportunity to really make the experience more pleasant for consumers. A lot more, your order's more accurate, it's more consistent. I think that's all positive things and ultimately helps a lot of these restaurant operators manage their businesses better.
Now, is Chipotle, are we going to see Autocado, the avocado peeling robot that can process one avocado in just 26 seconds? Does that work side by side with the chip robot that's already in place at some Chipotle locations?
I think that's the case. I mean, I think they'll probably let it test on its own in certain locations before they try to bring the two together. But I think ultimately, I mean, these are all good tests to kind of understand what works, what doesn't work. Is this something that can be implemented across a wide number of locations? And if it is, I mean, I think this could be an effective way to, you know, make operations more efficient and ultimately drive greater throughput and greater profitability.
RJ Hadavi, head of analytical research at the Los Altos, California-based foot traffic analysis firm Placer AI. Still ahead, some investment suggestions from our Monday stock picker.
This show is sponsored by Midi Health. There are great things that come with age: wisdom, experience, and knowledge, just to name a few. But if you're a woman over 40, it can also bring some less desirable things like hot flashes, insomnia, brain fog, moodiness, and weight gain. All symptoms of menopause and perimenopause. Yes, hormonal transition is a fact of life, but that doesn't mean you have to accept its symptoms as just another part of aging. Midi clinicians are menopause experts, equipped to support you with safe, effective, FDA-approved medications, as well as supplements, lifestyle coaching, and preventative health guidance. You'll come out of the experience feeling heard and with a plan to start feeling better. Midi offers accessible care. All their services are covered by insurance, and they're conveniently accessible through telehealth visits and 24/7 messaging. You deserve to feel great. Book your virtual visit today at joinmidi.com. That's join, MIDI.com.
This is Chicago's news, traffic, and weather station, News Radio 105.9. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Good afternoon, I'm Rob Hart. These are the top stories on News Radio WBBM. Mexican Independence Day weekend in Chicago wraps up without any major issues. President Biden discusses security in the aftermath of another apparent attempt to shoot former President Trump. The battle involving Chinese ownership of TikTok continues in a Washington, D.C. courtroom. It's Stock Picker Monday. We'll get a pair of investment ideas from a money pro. WBBM Business. The markets are mixed right now. The Dow is up 125 points, NASDAQ down 131, the S&P 500 down 4. 86 degrees right now in Chicago under mostly sunny skies. It's 12:31. Hundreds of thousands of people attended the Mexican Independence Day celebrations in Chicago over the weekend. The events took place without any major issues. That included the first downtown Mexican Independence Day festival in more than a decade, held in Grant Park. Road and ramp closures credited with generally keeping traffic under control. Those closures have since been lifted. President Biden says the Secret Service needs help from Congress after another apparent assassination attempt on Republican nominee Donald Trump.
Thank God the president's okay.
In his first remarks about yesterday's incident, the president says one thing is clear.
The service needs more help, and I think the Congress should respond to their needs if they, in fact, need more services.
Asked what those might be,
they may be deciding whether they need more personnel or not.
The agency's acting director is due to brief Trump in Florida today on the incident after acknowledging Secret Service failures in July's attempt on Trump's life. Sagar Meghani, Washington.
It's 12:32 as the noon business hour continues. Markets are mixed. Joining us on the Village of Bedford Park business line, reminding you to bring your business home, is Jim Awad, Senior Managing Director, Clearstead Advisors, based in New York. Jim, thank you for joining us today. And this is somewhat of a rare week for the financial markets as far as the Fed is concerned, because normally when the Fed cuts interest rates, the economy is falling apart, or there is a crisis brewing like we saw in the spring of 2020 with COVID-19. But in this case, the Fed's trying to bring the economy in for a soft landing, and we haven't experienced that in nearly 30 years.
Well, yeah, you're correct. We haven't, but it's very possible that they'll pull it off. I think what's confusing the markets today is that until last Thursday, there was a 75% chance that the Fed was going to decrease rates by 25 basis points and that we were going to have a soft landing and they would do a series of 25 basis point cuts over coming months. And then Thursday and Friday, the odds of a 50 basis point cut went up to 60%. And the market's trying to figure out what that means and whether that's good or whether that's bad. If they cut 25, there will be some who think the economy's in trouble who will be disappointed. If they cut 50, there will be some who worry that the Fed is more concerned about the economy than they are. So I think people are hedging their bets. They're confused. They're trying to understand what the Fed is thinking, what the Fed's going to do. The good news is we're only going to have to wait 48 hours to find out.
The quote from the economist Milton Friedman talking about the Fed, saying that it's like turning on the tap and then the water doesn't arrive for 16 to 18 months. So that's the speed at which the Fed interest rate cuts will work their way through the economy. And what are some of the near-term effects? I mean, if consumers are saving a little bit more on borrowing costs, could that potentially reignite inflation?
Well, it would provide some stimulus to the economy at a time when the economy is slowing down. The other side of the coin, though, is that savers have benefited tremendously from the high short-term rates. And so those who live off savings will be hurt. So it'll have positive and negative effects. But on balance, because two-thirds of GNP is consumer consumption, on balance, it should be a modest plus. But what's more important is where the Fed's going to end up over the next 12 months. How many times are they going to cut and how much are they going to cut? Is it 100 basis points? Is it 250 basis points? And are they cutting because they're achieving a soft landing and the economy is having a slowdown but not a recession? Or are they cutting because all of a sudden the economy is falling off a cliff? We don't know any of this. It's a work in progress, and you have to stay with your eyes on the road and your hands on the steering wheel.
Jim Awad, Senior Managing Director, Clearstead Advisors in New York. Thank you for joining us today. Coming up next, the Chinese parent company ByteDance fights to maintain control of its mega popular site, TikTok.
Conversation that's on the money. You're listening to the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
In Washington, D.C. today, a three-judge federal appellate panel is hearing challenges from TikTok over a law that gives the platform's China-based parent company, ByteDance, until January 19th to sell it or face a ban in the U.S. We're joined by Maria Curie, tech policy reporter for Axios in Chicago. Maria, thank you for joining us today. And it sounds like whatever happens today in federal court in D.C., this is going to be the first step in a very long process that will take it well past that January 19th deadline.
Hey, thanks so much for having me. That's correct. So both parties are hoping for the court to give them a response by early December, and that would give them enough time to kind of take this to the Supreme Court. And that's one way of extending the January 19th deadline you mentioned. Another way is to have this appellate court itself extend the deadline. But you are correct that one way or another, this is going to blow past January 19th.
Now, there have been, on a state level, a number of efforts to limit the usage of TikTok, at least on government-owned phones and tablets, that they could not use TikTok because there was some data security concerns about what ByteDance does with your data once it's in your possession. And now that has been extended to the federal government. President Trump tried to ban TikTok by executive order when he was in the White House, and now the Biden administration threw its weight behind this divest or be banned effort. But what else is going on? What's the state of play here? What are some of the concerns on both sides of this issue?
So what's really new here is kind of the line of questioning that each side faced in court. Just to recap, the main issue here that the Justice Department is raising is that this is a U.S. company, TikTok, that is owned by a foreign entity, not just a foreign entity, but a foreign adversary, which is ByteDance in China. And it's two concerns. One is the data privacy concern you mentioned, that U.S. personal sensitive information is making its way back to China. And then secondly, it's that China could make a covert foreign influence campaign and at any moment use the app to kind of spread propaganda. And because this code is based in China, these are 2 billion lines of code that are changed thousands of times each day. It's virtually impossible for any U.S. authority to kind of track that. And so that is the main concern. The issue that they run up against, which is what they face today in the line of questioning, is the fact that they don't have any evidence of China's doing anything wrong. It's kind of all based on a future potential threat, and that's what makes it challenging. On TikTok's side, they have to prove that this is a matter of a freedom of speech, and this is a First Amendment issue in which the creators who are on the platform, their speech would be restricted, but also the company itself. TikTok US is a US company that has First Amendment protections. DOJ says it's not a US company. It is a China-based company, and TikTok users have the freedom to go to any other platform.
And there's also a little bit of asymmetry, too, Maria, about what information is available to what parties, because the Department of Justice, they have access to classified information. The justices have access to that classified information. But when TikTok gets it, it's redacted.
That's correct. And that's also the issue that, you know, we in the media are running up against. This law was passed after a series of closed door meetings on Capitol Hill between lawmakers that were closed door because this information was all classified. And so this is, you know, part of the reason why it's going to be challenging for the Department of Justice is they don't really have evidence. And then the potential threats they do exist are classified. And so there's a black hole of information there that's going to be difficult to get around.
Obviously, ByteDance does not want to give up a very lucrative business over U.S. national security concerns. But were there any takers, or was there anybody sniffing around TikTok, an American tech company willing to take it over by that January 19th deadline?
I mean, there's some speculation that some of the other social media companies that would be able to give users that same audience exposure and those same social media tools, that one of them could take it up, but that might run into some antitrust concerns. You know, can these social media companies become too big?
Maria Curie, tech policy reporter, Axios in Chicago, thank you for joining us today. Join us at this time tomorrow for Travel Tuesday, and still to come, our Monday stock picker.
A deposit for your future. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Hey, it's Stock Picker Monday. Joining us with an investment strategy that helps people generate inflation-protected income for life, we welcome in Mark Hulbert, investment columnist for the Wall Street Journal, Barron's, and MarketWatch.com, based in Washington. Mark, thank you for joining the program once again. And can you give us some tips on tips?
Yeah, absolutely. It turns out that TIPS, it stands for the Treasury Securities that are indexed to inflation. They are relatively new in terms of history. They were created in the late 1990s. And so many historians, when they look back at what kind of spending rate we can spend in our retirement, they don't even include TIPS, which is a mistake, because they're even though they're relatively new, they really provide an excellent opportunity to lock in a rate of return that is guaranteed, I'll put in quotes and mention in a minute, but that's guaranteed to beat inflation. And of course, the only downside would be if the federal government goes bankrupt. But absent that, and let's hope, of course, that doesn't happen, then you are guaranteed to get a return that is equal to the inflation rate plus an additional amount, which right now is in the 2 to 3% range, which isn't bad. And so that's really the core of the investment strategy that I think makes a lot of sense.
And I feel like this dovetails nicely with another segment we did as part of Stock Picker Monday with you a couple of months ago about passive investing. I mean, we talk about individual stocks and the stories behind them, and it's interesting both just to hear about these businesses and also if you like to play the market, there are some good suggestions. But for most of us, we are passive investors and we are looking for a reliable source of income in retirement.
Absolutely. And this is perhaps the ultimate of passive investment strategies. You can buy what's known as a ladder, which is just a fancy term in the bond market for buying a collection of bonds that have different maturities. So you can go into the TIPS market and buy a collection of bonds, of these treasury inflation protected bonds that have maturities between now and 30 years from now, and each one will come due at a different point along the way and provide you with this guaranteed income. So if you were to create it today, you can, according to the latest calculations, I think you can spend 4%, inflation adjusted, 4% of your starting value of your portfolio every year and guaranteed to be able to last all those 30 years.
Now, you mentioned this income is guaranteed in quotes pending the solvency of the federal government. If Uncle Sam goes bust, this will endanger your source of income. Does that mean defaulting on the national debt? Would that qualify under an unthinkable scenario?
Well, yeah, it's hard to start to simulate what the world would look like in that scenario. I mean, if the federal government stops paying interest on its treasury securities, I think there'll be a lot more serious things for us to be worrying about, because it's, I think, in the grand scheme of things, one of the safest bets that you can make right now.
Mark Hulbert, investment columnist for The Wall Street Journal, Barron's, and MarketWatch.com, based in Washington. Thank you for joining us today.